Accession number 220-87, rule 10.
Corporal Weldon, rule 10. You're saying that you were changing the wheel and the Jeep came along with an army officer in it and asked you what was going on.
And I told him, and he said, "Oh, come on, we'll take it in 10. So we all pumped as fast as we could until we couldn't pump anymore. And then the next man, he had to go. And eventually, we got the right pressure in, and they gave us a lift up with a spare wheel back up behind the cab. And off we went. And he went his way, and he says, "Well, don't hang around because there's one or two stragglers floating about, you know." He says, "Get in as soon as you can." Anyway, I got caught up with the rest of them, and that was all right. It was all right. That was it.
What did you ever actually run across any Japanese stragglers?
No.
During the advance?
No.
So you weren't shot at when you were on the road?
No. Not to my knowledge. Lucky, I suppose. Dead lucky.
Did you ever run short of anything that you needed to keep the truck going during this advance?
No, we used to think hard in front. Now then, you could... you couldn't fill up with fuel to come back down the line. You had to make sure you had enough with you. And I travelled with a 30-gallon barrel of fuel.
In the back?
On the back tailboard, you know,
yeah,
to make sure that I could get back again, you know. Mm. And I also had a jerry can full of water, and I think I remember about it. That engine never burnt any oil. I can never remember having to put any oil in it, only when it was being changed. Mm. So it was a six-cylinder Chrysler engine. It was beautiful. The only snag was it was only 6-volt electrics. And of course,
why was that a problem?
Well, that was your batteries that didn't last any length of time, you know. And you never could use your starter. It was always used to use the handle because there'd be a cell gone or something. You'd have 6 volts for ignition and all that, and your lights while your engine was running. But as soon as the engine was idling, and the batteries was about, you know, and there was no chance of getting another one either. That was to make do best you could. Because I went once one night, we was on the move, and we was held up, and next thing I knew, there was a dispatch rider banging on the door. I'd fell asleep. We'd been working all day, and then we'd set off at 6 o'clock at night to move to another strip, and they held up and just dropped off. And the corporal who was with me, he was everybody. They were all asleep. I'd fast asleep. Absolutely, Tom Dunn, you know. And then gets in, pulls off the road, and then next morning, this sergeant, he wasn't a very nice sort of a bloke, wasn't this one. He opened the door and I fell out. I was still asleep. And he shouting and bawling, "Stop the way he went talking to me." I thought, charming, isn't it, eh? I think he'd been asleep all night, because he wouldn't be driving.
No.
Yeah.
Was it hard to start on the handle?
No, it was a good start, and a couple of turns and it went all right, you know. Aye, it was a good wagon. It had a 2-speed back axle, and that gave you about 8 gears, you see. You had your ordinary 4,
and then
you had another 4 with that other, if you went into low speed with that start again, you know. Mm. It was that you could, and ladder could climb hills, you know, because I mean, it was going up 8,000 to 9,000 feet. Rarefied it, and there was no boiling and not a stutter, no problem.
No problem with the altitude at all.
No. The only thing was, one of our lads, he was a bit, he thought he was clever. When you're mounting, descending, you want to be in a low gear, third. I think it's sometimes second. And we had the handbrake worked on a drum on the propeller shaft, just behind the gearbox. And then you had your ordinary hydraulic brakes.
Yes.
On the pedal.
Yeah.
Well, he was descending, and he was in too high a gear, and he was using his brakes.
Yes.
Well, they'll overheat and boil the fluid and you've got none at all. So to stop it, you see there would be about 6,000 or 7,000 foot straight down on that side. The other side is a cliff. So what he did, he rammed into the cliff and pulled up that way. Now then, Ginger, what's up? No brakes. I said, what gear was you in? I said, you're in too high a gear. I said, it's no good. You'll never get nowhere like that. I said, you have to go in into second. I says, and use your handbrake till it smokes and then use your foot brake. And then do
handbrake again.
Handbrake, yeah. Foot right that way, yeah. See? Yeah. And that's what he did. But
did you wear a lot of brake shoes while you were doing
no,
that?
We never had replacements.
No.
They lasted all the way through, that one lot, you know. And it was pretty harsh conditions, really.
What was it like in the wet, you know, in wet weather? Did that affect its performance at all?
No, it was all right. As long as you was not on the mud, you know.
Mm.
If it got on a road where there was no metal, that was it. Mm. There was one particular time was going down the road and the monsoon had started. And my lorry's packed in. And I looked behind and the lorry behind me, it had packed in. And what had happened, it was blowing sideways, was the wind and the rain, and it was blowing onto the distributor.
So then it got wet.
And it got wet. And so did the bloke behind, he was the same. And we could do nothing about it at all, because it was raining, there's no way you could get it started. So we just sat there and waited. Had a cigarette and waited. Now then, army lad comes by with a six-wheel mobile workshop. Now then, what's up with you? I says, same as him. I says, I'm waterlogged. He says, you got a tow rope? I says, oh, yes. So my mate was towing a gun, and then I hung on to that gun, and there was me, and I was towing a gun. So there was a mobile workshop, a lorry and a gun. And that soldier, he took us, he says, I can take you as far as the Burmese guerrillas, he says, and then leave you with them. He says, you're better with them than you are by yourselves. So he says, I'll have to go, I can't hang about any longer. So I said, oh, well, thanks a lot, mate, and off he went. And he left us with these gorillas, and first job was to get the kettle on and have a cup of tea, you know. And we was having a cup of tea and with these Burmese gorillas.
What were they like?
Oh, they were ruffians, you know. But they were all right, there was four of us, and they'd do anything to help. And he brought four bricks and a lid of a petrol tin, a big 30-gallon one, and he lit a fire in the middle of his hut to get the kettle boiled, because it was pouring rain. Anyway, we had a cup of tea and a biscuit or something, and then I looked at it, I said, hey, it's paired up. So I out up with a bonnet and dried the distributor out and what have you, and tried it. It set off on one cylinder, and two, three. And eventually I says, hey, we're in for a chance, how about it? We'll get yours going as well. So Gorry's going. I said, well, I had to make a run for it now. So we made a run for it, and that was it. We eventually got in, but it was dark when we got in.
Got into the box?
Yeah, the box defence. Yeah.
You never stopped home night outside a box?
No, not if you could help it. Oh, no. If we would have done if we'd have stopped with them gorillas, but I thought, no, we'll...
How many of the gorillas were there?
There were about six, I think, half a dozen.
What sort of weapons did they have?
I never noticed any weapons.
Oh.
Maybe had them in the hut out the side, right? You know.
Were they in any sort
but
of...
But that army bloke, he seemed to know all about him, we didn't, yeah.
Were they in any sort of uniform or...
No, just like ragtag and bobtail, you know, and Burmese dress. You know.
Did they speak any English at all? Or?
Not a lot, But they made us welcome anyway. So, shall we call it a night? Yeah.